Yeah, it looks like it. No, it's not exactly a light cannon, but that's dimmer than normal, isn't it? To do a little mood lighting in here, I guess. I'll get him to check it out after class. Probably needs a new bulb or something. Well, I have a date for quiz 2. That's a week from today. So I'm from chapter 4 plus whatever chapter 5 we get through on Monday. So prepare yourselves for that. The Chapter 5 assignment in Mastering Chemistry will be due a week from this Friday. You have a lab report for Experiment 6. What was that, the interface one?
The reactions.
Oh, that was, no, reactions was, which one is which?
Reactions.
Yeah. Reactions is due today. Yeah. Which is 6, did I put the number wrong?
Yeah.
Which one is the interface one, is that 7? Oh, I just deleted the wrong one. Yeah, that's what it used to be. So 7 is due on Monday. But 19th is the right date for Monday. So. Yep. Just say that. So there's no confusion. Okay. At 3 p.m. Okay. I'm back here. You can see my notes now. Yes. In this chapter, things like gas laws, maybe titration. So, probably just two problems or something, 2 or 3 problems. We have to show your work. Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, you have until midnight tonight to do that one. That's everything. Any other questions? Yeah, you have until tonight to do the Chapter 4 Mastering Chemistry. Okay? All right. Where we ended last time was Boyle's Law. This fits very well with what you did in lab on Monday, correct? We've got the schedule pretty well aligned here, I suppose. PV is constant. You saw that, right? Is PV always constant? Is every pressure multiplied by every volume equal to one particular constant? What changes when PV is constant and when it's a different value? So let's put that a different way. PV is one certain constant value as long as what? As long as the amount of gas you have is the same. Or even simpler, as long as you're just dealing with one sealed container. Right? If you have a container with the gas sealed inside of it, and you move the volume, right, you make it bigger or smaller, the pressure will change. Right? If you had a way of changing pressure, then volume would change. But usually it's volume, the thing that we change, because you can actually pull on a plunger or push it down like that, and pressure changes in response. Okay? So let's say PV is constant for a closed container. So we can think of that one closed container having two different states. Maybe you start with the plunger out, and then you push the plunger in, or something like that. Or maybe you have a container, and you stretch it out and increase its volume, or something like that. But for one container, with 2 points in time, you can set up a simple relationship like this. Since PV is constant, then the pressures and volumes at 1 point in time will equal the product of pressures and volumes at another point in time, right, for a single closed container. This has to assume everything else is constant, right? This assumes we have the same amount of gas. This assumes that temperature remains constant, and we'll deal with the relationships that those have in a few minutes. So let's do a little problem here. 6.2 liters of air at 760 millimeters of mercury. Anybody remember what's special about 760 millimeters of mercury? Yeah, that's one atmosphere, right? So, I'm sorry? At sea level, yeah, that's right. Okay. So 6.2 liters of air at 760 is compressed to 4.4 liters. What is the new pressure, assuming constant temperature, assuming the container is closed? Okay. This is an issue where we'd be able to use P1V1 equals P2V2 because we have one container with two different states. And all that changes is pressure and volume within that one container. Okay. So, just like we did with the dilution equation, a good way to keep track of it is to have the ones be before and the twos be after. Okay? So, which variable will you solve for? P2. Okay? What is the new pressure? Okay? So, why don't you rearrange P1V1 equals P2V2, rearrange that solving for P2. Okay? Use a little algebra. And then substitute in the three known values you have and solve for P2. Okay? Give it just a second to get that written down. While you're working, I'll point out that units on questions like this only matter to the extent that one unit matches the other one, similar to it. Okay? So both your pressures have to be in the same unit. In other words, both your volumes have to be in the same unit. But the pressures could both be in atmospheres, or they could both be in torr or millimeters or mercury. The volumes could both be in liters or milliliters or microliters or whatever, as long as they match. And you'll see that if, in your math, the units cancel out correctly. You'll see that the units have to be the same. Okay? So, get that written down. Share your answer with somebody nearby you to see if you did the same thing. We'll discuss it in just a moment. Yeah. think if we use some logic, if the menu display is no brighter than anything else, then there's nothing I can do about it. It's nothing up here, it's something in there. And it's not brightness or anything like that, I don't think. Yeah, brightness 100, yeah, great.
It's possible the ball is just pretty low.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. That's not much. 327, that's pretty new. So. That's not good. There we go. Get rid of it there. Our eyes will adjust and we'll make it work, but I'll still make them fix it in a minute. So I had you rearrange the equation. You said you solved for P2. What do you have to do to both sides to solve for P2? And that does what to V2 on the right? Cancels it out. So P2 is P1 V1 over V2. All right. Tell me these numbers. Somebody over to my right, what's P1?
16.
All right. Okay. Down in front here, what's V1?
6.2.
Good. Okay. In the back, in the middle there, someone, what is V2?
4.4 meters.
It's a tough one, right? It looks like 2 sig figs. Somebody over here, you guys get an answer? Say that louder. 1070? Yeah? 1070, 1100? Something like that, to 2 sig figs. One times 10 to the 3. Good. We're doing 2 sig figs. Based on what you know, and based on you know what you felt with the syringes in lab last time, does it make sense? What happened to the pressure going from before to after? Pressure increased. Does that make sense? Because what happened to the volume? Volume decreased. And the relationship between pressure and volume is inversely proportional. We squished down on this container that compressed those gas molecules more, so they're beating against the sides of the container more often. Anyway, okay? All right. Make sense? Perfect. Alrighty. New law. Here's Charles's law. I gave you a graph with some data points printed on it. Charles's law relates volume and temperature for a fixed amount of gas, just like Boyle's law related volume and pressure for a fixed amount of gas. Now we're bringing temperature in, but at if we're only relating volume and temperature, what does that mean is the other thing that has to be constant?
Pressure.
At a constant pressure. So, I have a container whose volume and temperature can be changed, but the gas inside it is at a constant pressure. How would we be, what kind of container would that look like? Container whose volume changes, but the gas inside it is always at a constant pressure. Yeah, a balloon would be an approximate example. There's still some force against which the gas has to push in order to keep the balloon inflated. Maybe a better example, something that's not so elastic, would be just like a plastic bag full of gas or something like that, where the gas isn't having to press against an elastic container to hold it open. But a balloon is a first approximation that we like to use. The pressure inside a balloon will remain fairly constant when we change its temperature. So what I have here are some data points in three colors that we can almost see. They go diagonal and to the left. So what we have are three trials with three different amounts of gas. Okay? Let's pretend that this top one was something like 1 mole of gas. Middle one, let's pretend that's half a mole. Let's pretend that that bottom one is 0.25. All right. Do you detect any patterns between these data points? What is the relationship between volume and temperature? As the temperature increases, the volume increases. What kind of relationship is that called? Yeah, temperature and volume are directly proportional. Okay. That means a graph of volume versus temperature would yield a linear graph, a linear trend line with a positive slope, okay, going up that way. What we can do is connect these dots. We could make an imaginary trend line and see what that would give us. And we could actually extrapolate down to the x-axis. So here, I'm just going to put my paper up next to this and draw a straight line through these dots. Okay. Draw a straight line through these dots. Oops. It's close. Should bring a ruler. All right. Like that. Okay? All three of these lines fall to a somewhat similar value on the x-axis down here. Right? It's not going to be exact because of issues with the gas not acting ideal. We'll talk about that towards the end of the chapter. But we'll be able to get a pretty consistent value. If we did several pretty evenly spaced trials, we'd be able to get an average. Okay? So I have a certain temperature down here that corresponds to how much volume? Yeah, this would be zero volume. If you have a sample of gas in something like a balloon and you lower its temperature, what happens to those gas molecules when you lower the temperature? Yeah, we talked about that a little bit. Temperature is directly related to how much molecular motion there is. So they're moving a little more slowly. They have a little less kinetic energy. They're able to strike the inside surface with a little less force. Okay. Which means that container won't be able to hold up against the external atmospheric pressure as well. So the volume decreases. If you, I'll try to get some liquid nitrogen here in the next week or so. We've got some neat things we can show with liquid nitrogen and balloons and stuff like that. But if you chill down a balloon, its volume actually decreases quite a bit because of the reduced motion of the molecules inside of there. So if we cool it down enough, eventually that gas would be able to collapse. Right? It would condense into a liquid first. So this is just an extrapolation. This is just sort of an idea of theoretically what would happen if we had no more volume. But What's special about this temperature that we would have solved for in this graph here? This is a special minimum temperature, which we've referred to before. This is an estimate of absolute zero. That point would be 0 liters, 0 Kelvin. Okay. And this is significant, I point this out, because this was where the first estimate of absolute zero actually came from in experiments. So Charles and a lot of other scientists dealing with gases and volume and pressure and stuff like that, Charles is credited for this discovery of the relationship of volume and temperature, and in those experiments, they envisioned a possible minimum temperature, which would correspond to no volume. That was the first appearance of absolute zero.
In chemistry, do we call that point 0 Kelvin? Because I know in physics we use like -273 or whatever.
-273 Celsius.
Okay.
Yeah, absolute zero is 0 Kelvin minus 273 Celsius. Since Kelvin is an absolute temperature scale, 0 Kelvin means 0 temperature.
Okay.
Right. So that was pretty interesting. There are lots of other experiments later on that pinned down the value of absolute zero to a more and more accurate temperature. Okay. So, but that's a pretty famous one. So, what would be one way of rephrasing what we observed here as Charles's law, something about volume and temperature? I think you already said it.
As temperature decreases, volume
decreases. Mm-hmm. And as temperature increases, volume
increases.
So that means volume and temperature are directly proportional. Right? Volume is proportional to temperature. Okay. That's that proportional sign again. It's like an infinity that's not quite finished. Okay. So volume is proportional to temperature. Another way of saying that is volume equals some constant times T. Or if I got that constant by itself, V over T is constant. Lots of ways of saying that same thing. If V over T is constant, how would I make a simple equation that shows volume and temperature changing at two times, at two points? If V over T is constant. V1 over T1. Yeah, there we go. V1 over T1 equals V2 over T2. In order for this relationship to work, you have to have something be constant. Okay? If you solve for something that's constant, that means you can change one of these things, the other will change in response in order to keep that value the same. So that's when you can set two different time periods. So V1 over T1 equals V2 over T2. So here's a balloon. 1 liter at 298 Kelvin. What is its volume at 77.4 Kelvin? Just simply saying this question like this, where I'm not mentioning anything else, means that we can assume some things. What's one thing we can assume when all I'm telling you is this information?
Constant pressure.
Yeah, we assume constant pressure. What else?
Volume is smaller.
I'm sorry? We assume volume. Well, that's Charles's law. What can we assume remains constant also? Amount of gas. Assume the balloon is sealed, right? Which variable are you solving for?
V2.
And here we don't specifically say before or after. We just give you one situation and ask about another situation. Sometimes it's easier to think of what you've given as before, and then we change it so that we have after. But it actually doesn't matter. Okay? You could have solved for V1 and used the other ones for 2, and you get the same answer. Okay? All that matters here is that you have two different points in time, and that you get the two pairs related to each other. So just solving the algebra here, V2 equals what up on top? Can you guys over here get something? If you just rearrange this equation for V2, what would that be equal to? V1 T2 over T1. Because what did I have to do to this equation to get V2 alone by itself?
Multiply each side by T2.
Yeah, I had to multiply each side by T2. Okay. Here's a tricky one that, even though it's introductory algebra, would confuse some students, I think. What would I have to do to solve for T2?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there has to be some inverse property going on here. So if we were doing it in a strictly algebra sense, I would multiply both sides by T2 to get it up here, and then I would take the inverse of this fraction over on the right. So T2 would be V2 T1 over V1. So make sure you can do that. There are a lot of students that would say T2 equals V1 over T1 V2. That's not correct. That's 1 over T2. Okay? You can't just simply solve for this one by getting it alone by itself. Can't solve for that one by getting it alone by itself over on that side. It has to be brought to the top on the other side. So please be careful of that. I assume we can all identify V1 and T2. T1 Somebody over here get an answer? Point what?
30.
Point 30?
I got point 26.
Yeah. Yeah. Point 26 has two significant figures. So yeah. That's what I got. Okay, I've got an important question here. Would this calculation, would this calculation work in degrees Celsius? What if, so 298 Kelvin, that's about, 25 C? 77.4 Kelvin, what's that going to be in C? That's going to be negative 200 or something C. Okay. If I had a negative 200 C, if I have one single negative value in that calculation, what's that going to do to the answer? It's going to make it negative. What's a negative volume? Doesn't make any sense. It's rare. Negative volumes are rare. That's correct. Okay. Did you have a question?
They both mean
it's zero.
I'm sorry?
Ah, that's right. Liters and Kelvin up on our graph there, they both met at zero. And that's important for a directly proportional relationship. The two have to meet at zero. They have to have no y-intercept. In order to do this simple calculation.
Well, your graph says degrees Celsius.
Yeah, that says degrees Celsius, but zero is way over there, right? it would have to be Kelvin in order to, and I called that point 0 liters 0 Kelvin, when we talked about it up there. Okay? Here's another way to think of it. What if I had, So what if I had 273 Kelvin as one of the temperatures? What's 273 Kelvin in Celsius? Zero. Are we allowed to divide by 0 Celsius? Mathematicians get really nervous when we have a 0 on the bottom of a fraction. Bad things happen. And I don't even understand what it is, but really bad things happen when 0 is on the bottom of a fraction. Yeah, something like that. If I had 0 on the top of the fraction, our answer would be 0 liters, and that doesn't make sense either.
You're just going to change it to Kelvin.
That's right. Will this calculation work in degrees Celsius? No. We must use an absolute temperature. Okay. Kelvin being the absolute temperature that we use. There are other absolute temperature scales that are very rarely used, but in other words, it has to be a scale where both the volume and the temperature would meet at 0 in order to have a proper directly proportional relationship, and that's important. Okay? So that means in gas laws, pretty much in this chapter, our temperatures have to be in what unit? Kelvin. Okay? Our temperatures had better be in Kelvin for pretty much any calculations we do in the gas laws unit. Okay? All right. Avogadro's law. Is that a familiar name? Yeah. Avogadro's number is the number of atoms or molecules in a mole. What does that have to do with gases? Well, Avogadro's law relates the amount in moles with volume, assuming constant temperature and pressure. Okay? You guys got to this a little bit in your experiment on Monday, where you had twice the amount of gas in there. You had twice the product of PV. You had 4 times the amount. You had 4 times the product of PV. Well, this is a little simpler even than that. It relates moles with volume. Okay? If I had a constant temperature and a constant pressure, so something like a balloon, let's pretend I had, and I calculated this so it's approximate, if I had 0.1 moles of air, right, which is mostly nitrogen, some oxygen, and so on, I'd have a balloon in there with a volume of about 2 liters. Okay? 2-liter balloon is about like that. Okay? If I had 0.2 moles of air, what would be the volume of that balloon?
2 liters.
Amounts with volume. I would have a 4-liter balloon. I just have to label my drawings so you know those are balloons and not whoopee cushions or something like that. We use n, lowercase n, as our variable for amount in moles. So at the end of lab on Monday, I asked pretty much all of you, what unit do you use for an amount of something? And you say, grams or liters? Or amount in chemistry is measured in moles. Okay? That's different from mass, because the same amount of one chemical can have a different mass as another chemical, right? Depending on molar masses. You've got little molecules and big molecules. Okay? Masses can be different. Okay? If you have the same amount of one liquid as another liquid, they could have different volumes because they may have different densities. So amount is a fundamental concept in how much something there is. It's related directly to how many molecules there are, or how many atoms there are of a substance. Okay? So moles are the unit that we use to measure amount, just like grams is what we use to measure mass, and liters is what we use for volume, and so on. Okay? Does that make sense? So from now on, when I say amount, I'm talking about moles. So, simple observations here. This is an observation that Avogadro made. He didn't actually have moles, but he was actually dealing with specific amounts of gases that were produced in chemical reactions. So if you decompose water, you get 2 moles of hydrogen for every 1 mole of oxygen. And he noticed that when you do that, if you bubble them into 2 containers, you got twice the volume of hydrogen as oxygen. So that's what told him that the amount of gas you have is directly proportional to the volume, okay? Or the number of gas molecules is directly proportional to the volume of that substance. So volume directly proportional to what? N, number of moles. Okay. Here's another one. If I had, one mole of oxygen gas, okay, it will have, I could make a balloon that contains 1 mole of oxygen gas. That would be a big balloon. It would be about like that. We'll talk about what amount that would be later. How would that compare to a balloon filled with nitrogen gas? Any ideas? Yeah, let's think about that.
It might be the same volume, but it would be different molar mass.
The mass? I agree. The mass would be different, okay? Because nitrogen is lighter than oxygen. Right? Molar mass of O2 is 32, molar mass of N2 is 28. So mass would be different, but say that louder.
Same size.
It'd be the same size. That's because, think back to the molecular view of gases. Okay? When we drew a picture about where the molecules are in a gas, how are those molecules related? How are they in position with each other? How do we describe their positions in a gas? They're freely moving. What about where they are? Very spread apart. Okay? If they're very spread apart, if a gas is made out of mostly empty space, then the size or the mass of the gas molecule themselves has no impact on the actual volume of the container. So 1 mole of O2 will be the same size balloon as 1 mole of N2. There's a volume. There's volume. Make those approximately the same. 1 mole. The largest gas I can think of, sulfur hexafluoride, which we'll talk about later. Okay? Yeah. So, the identity of gas does not. Oops. Affect the volume. Okay? As long as temperature and pressure are constant, if I have 1 mole of any gas, that'll be a standard volume. Okay? So that's an important concept that we'll be reinforcing throughout the semester, that for gases, at least the size and the pressure and stuff like that of the gases, the things that we'll be describing, these variables we've talked about so far, pressure, volume, temperature, moles, things like that determine the behavior of gases, not really what the actual substance is. So oxygen, nitrogen, chlorine, right, even a large molecule like sulfur hexafluoride. If I have 1 mole of them, they will have the same volume. Left some blank space at the bottom of this page so that we can review just a couple of the relationships we talked about. Charles's law, PV is constant. Okay. I'm sorry, that's Boyle's law. Charles's law is V over T. Let me ask, don't get those confused. Okay. If PV is constant And V over T is constant for a certain container. These can be combined together, right? Whenever you have relationships that make a constant like that, you can combine them together. So how would I combine these three variables together in one relationship? You know, this is the relationship between P and V. This is the relationship between V and T. How would they combine? PV over T is. Okay. So, if PV over T is constant, then P1V1 over T1 equals P2V2 over T2. This is useful if you're changing pressure, volume, and temperature. But with this, what do you still have? What would you have to keep constant if you did this?
Number of moles.
Number of moles, so it has to be in a sealed container, right? So rather than doing a calculation with this, which we could, let me just ask you a simple, silly question. If we have a sealed container, if we double the volume, and we double the temperature, what happens to the pressure? Think about that. Don't say anything. Think about that.
Think about it in your head here.
If you think you know what happens, share it with your neighbor, see if they agree. And if you want to use some numbers, you could say, if you're doubling volume, you could say V1 is 1, V2 is 2. Fun to do it that way. If you're doubling temperature, T1 could be 1 and T2 could be 2. Let's get it. I have a sealed container, something like a balloon. Or if we're doubling volume, it's hard to do that with a balloon. You'd have to stretch it out. Let's use a plunger. Okay? I double the volume, so I pull up on that plunger. If I just did that and kept temperature constant, what would happen to pressure? If I pull up on a plunger, like you did in lab, you pulled back on a plunger, the pressure went down. You could feel it pulling against you. Right? Okay. So if I did that, the pressure would go down. But what if I did that, and then I doubled the absolute temperature? What would that do to the pressure? It would bring it back to what it originally was. Right? Volume and temperature do opposite things to pressure. Okay. So volume, same side here, it has to be inversely proportional to pressure in order for those to change and to keep the other side the same. Okay? Pressure and temperature have to be directly proportional. Because if I increase that one, I would have to increase that one also to keep the fraction the same. Okay? So double the volume, double the temperature. Pressure equal to P1. P2 equals P1, if that's the case. What if I halved the volume and doubled the temperature? Halved the volume, so I pushed down on that plunger to half of what it originally was. Pressure would double just if I pushed down on it. Okay? Then what if I also doubled the temperature? It would double that pressure. So overall, if I halved volume and doubled temperature, what would happen to pressure? Yeah, four times. P2 would be four times P1. Okay? So, be able to, and this is just a combination of those ones that we've seen before. You can use this to combine Boyle's law and Charles's law There's also another law that involves pressure and temperature that we didn't talk about, but that's the same as volume and temperature. They're directly proportional. If you have a rigid container, let's use this thought experiment. If you have your rigid container, like a plastic Tupperware container, something like that, that's rigid, that has a lid on it, that's sealed, and you double its temperature by putting it in the microwave or something like that, what happens to the pressure inside of it? Yeah, the pressure will double, which will and double the pressure would mean that the lid would go flying off or something. Okay? So pressure and temperature are directly proportional. That's how a pressure cooker works. Right? You seal the container down and heat it up, and the pressure goes way up inside of it. All right. I'm going to write each of these laws in terms of volume. Okay? In terms of volume and what volume is proportional to. Okay? So, Boyle's law is what you did in lab. Okay? This is actually the graph that you made, or close to the graph that you made. If I wanted volume on one axis, what would I have to put on the other axis to make a straight line? 1 over pressure. That's right. Okay? Charles's law would be a balloon that I was heating up, or a balloon that I was chilling. So volume is proportional to what? Temperature. Okay? Avogadro's law is the balloon where I put 1 mole of gas, or 2 moles of gas, or 3 moles of gas in it. So volume would be proportional to what? Number of moles. Okay. Turns out I could combine all three of these together. Volume, right? If volume is proportional to these three things, how would I combine these three together? Similar to how we did it on the last page. What would I do? Volume equals what? N times T over P? Okay. Times some constant, right? Let's make it volume is proportional to that, or volume equals N times T over P times some constant. Lo and behold, I have a value down here. R is called the ideal gas constant. R is this constant right here. Okay? R is the proportionality constant between volume and N times T over P. Okay? R is the constant with which those four variables are related. So here is its value, 0.08206. With specific units. Why would I have liters times atmospheres over moles times Kelvin? That's right. R would have liters on top because this constant over here, or is it this constant over here, would be equal to a volume if these other things canceled away. Why would I want atmospheres on top for a constant in this situation like that? Yeah, it cancels the pressure on the bottom. Same thing with moles and Kelvin on the bottom. They cancel N and T on top. The constants we use for equations in this course will be calibrated so that they cancel appropriate units. So if you were doing a calculation like this that involved those variables and R, and say you were given a volume in millimeters of mercury, what would you have to do with that volume before you would be able to use the constant R? Yeah, you'd have to convert it to the appropriate unit that's in here. Same thing with degrees Celsius. It would have to be converted to Kelvin. Milliliters would have to be converted to liters, and so on. So the number of this is just as important as its units.
Okay. V, N, T, and P. Must have these units to use this value. Of R.
That's a common mistake that students in this course make. They assume that the constant they're given automatically has all the right units compared to the data that they're given. Okay? That always should probably be the first check that you do to make sure the units of your constant match the units that you're given. And if they don't, you have to convert them so that they do. Okay? On a multiple choice question, a multiple choice calculation that might involve something like this, one of the incorrect choices would probably be just substituting the constant in there without considering units, for instance. Okay? So, if I take all of this and rearrange it so that everything's all on one line, we get P, V equals N, R, T. How's that pronounced? Pivnert. Right? P, V equals N, R, T. Pressure times volume equals number of moles times the R, ideal gas constant, times T, which is temperature in Kelvin. Okay? So, here's the ideal gas law. If all we have to do, and the neat thing about ideal gas law, and calling it Pivnert, it's a good way to remember it. If you know PV equals NRT, you do not need to memorize the fact that P over T is constant, or that P times V is constant. Why? Because if you know this, you can tell what the relationship is going to be between any two of these variables. Okay? If all I'm changing is, all I'm changing is P and V. If N and T are constant, okay, I have PV equals a constant, or V equals 1 over P. Right? You just sort of ignore these other variables that you're not changing. Make them constant. Right? If N and P are constant, then V is proportional to T. Okay? V equals T with some manner of constants multiplied in. That makes V proportional to T. Okay? V is proportional to N if everything else is constant. Okay? N is proportional to T if everything else is constant. And that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. We might talk a little bit about that later. But, P and T are proportional and so on. So you can use this relationship to figure out those other empirical gas laws, the small gas laws, just right from that relationship. Okay? So let's use the ideal gas law. And ideal gas law is nice because we no longer need two data points. Okay? We no longer need a time one and a time two. We can have just one container with certain things about it, and we can solve for the rest of it because we know what the constant is. Okay? So here's our word problem. 438-liter gas cylinder contains 0.855 kilograms of O2. At 21 degrees Celsius, what is the pressure in atmospheres and in millimeters mercury inside this container? So, before we go solving this one, let me get you started. What's the equation we will use for this? All right. What I strongly, strongly recommend you do in an equation like this that has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or 4 variables and a constant, where you're solving for one, I strongly recommend you make a list of those variables so that you're sure that you aren't switching things around, so that you're sure units are proper and so on. Okay? So, P. What role will P have in the calculation that we're doing here? P is what we're solving for, so P is question mark. Okay? V. What's V in this one? Okay. Is liters an appropriate unit? Well, we'll see. N. Where in this problem does it say how many moles we have? Oh, it doesn't. What do I do about that?
Kilograms.
I'll let you guys do that. So, those kilograms convert into what? Grams? Put those into grams first. Where do you put the 1,000 for kilograms into grams? Aren't just kilograms, those are kilograms of O2. Because what will I convert grams of O2 into? Moles of O2. Using what? How do I convert grams of O2 into moles of O2? Molar mass? Anybody get a molar mass of O2? 32. Anybody get an answer for N, for moles of O2? Yeah, keep plenty of digits, because we're not done with it. Okay. N is moles. If moles do not appear in your calculation, but grams do, use the molar mass. Okay. Look back at our value of R. Okay. I have it written right here, 0.08206 liters atmospheres per Kelvin per mole. So is our volume in an appropriate unit?
Yes.
Is N an appropriate unit?
Yes.
Okay. Is T an appropriate unit? No. What do I have to do to 21.0 degrees Celsius to get it into the unit we want? Kelvin equals Celsius plus 273.15. That's a value that's on your conversion sheet that'll be given to you. Okay. The value of R will be given for you. Right? Are you at 294.15 Kelvin? Is that right? If we use this value of R, what will our unit of pressure be? So, nice to write that up in there. Okay? 95.7% of your problems with ideal gas law problems will be solved by doing what we just did right there. Okay? So the vast majority of points that students get off for doing a problem like this could be avoided by writing out the variables and checking that they're in the correct units. Okay? A lot of you think it's just a matter of plugging in the values you get right into the equation. Okay? Those are the students that get stupid points taken off for them because they weren't careful enough to make sure the units were correct. Okay? If you're showing your work on a question like this, it is to your advantage to write something like that out first, because then I can clearly see which unit you didn't convert, or which silly mistake you made converting a unit or something like that, and you can get almost all the partial credit. If all you did was plug some numbers in and get an answer, then I don't know what happened, and I'll be much less able to give you partial credit. So that's always going to be a general rule in here. The more detail you can have in very neatly arraying your data like that, it's going to be helpful. So we're solving for P. If I solve this equation for P, what's it look like? Right? And R. T. Over V. What should I double check about this calculation before I go punch in those numbers in my calculator? Yeah, I better check that those units cancel. Does moles cancel? Sure. Moles on here, moles on the bottom of this fraction on the same level. Okay. Kelvin, same thing.
Liters,
bottom of the big fraction, top on the top there. The unit that remains is atmospheres, just like we had hoped. Okay. Pressure equals. You got an answer. Compare it with your neighbors. You've got the same thing.
1.52.
Anybody else get an answer? 1.52? See what I got. 1.52. Read our question again carefully. We're not done yet. We have to do what? To convert atmospheres into millimeters of mercury. Anybody remember that conversion? 760 millimeters per one atmosphere. You do not need to memorize that. That will be given to you, that one atmosphere is 760 millimeters of mercury, but it's a common one. You'll probably get used to it. What do you get? Yeah. All right. So, every single one of you, okay? And I know there are students in here that have differing levels of math, okay? There are some of you coming from physics or something which are used to plugging and chugging into an equation. Something like this isn't a big deal, okay? There are some of you coming from a second semester algebra or something where you're still getting used to plugging numbers into an equation like this, okay? All of you will benefit by doing what we did right there, okay? By writing out the five letters, P, V, N, R, and T, taking given values, plugging them in there, looking at which one needs to be solved for, okay? It's an excellent way of making sure the units are what they need to be, or if a unit is missing, try it like N, okay? Taking your given value, knowing that masses can be converted into moles, like we've done a million times so far. But if you don't do something like that, when you're nervous on an exam, you may see kilograms and you may see N, and you might not make the connection unless you actually write something like that out. Okay? So there are a lot of reasons for doing it this way. I would get used to practicing these with that sort of table beforehand. There's been, you know, I'm sort of weird. I read educational literature and things like that. There is actual literature that shows that students that write out the variables in a table like that before they do a question get tremendously, have much more success in doing problems like this. Major part of the course, if it's not doing canceling the units in unit conversion, it's taking a large equation and plugging values into it. Okay? Both cases, the units are what will keep us from making silly mistakes. Okay? So that's my piece about that. I know there's still going to be some of you that think that this is a waste of time, and we'll see if you pay the price or not. Okay? Any questions about that? Please, in the assigned textbook problems, there are examples where all of those, P, V, N, and T, need to be solved for. Okay? I would make it a point of practicing at least one of each type. Practice one where you have to find a pressure like we did, where you have to find a volume, where you have to find N. Or, if you're asked for grams, what do you have to solve for? N, and then convert into grams, using more mass. Okay? So, solve for T in Kelvin. Practice converting between Kelvin and Celsius. You could be asked for a temperature in Celsius. Okay? All right. Let's apply this to a couple of specific instances. Standard temperature and pressure is a specific set of conditions which are used in a lot of example cases. Okay? So, whenever we see STP, that's standard temperature and pressure, you need to know, I hate to use the word memorize, but you better memorize this. It will be important for you to know that standard temperature and pressure is 0 Celsius, which is 273 Kelvin, and it's 1 atmosphere. Okay? On the exam, a problem might be set up saying that this is at STP. And you'll need to know that you need to plug 1 atmosphere and 273 Kelvin into a calculation, for instance. Okay? So, at STP, let's solve PV equals NRT for volume, and let's solve for volume. I don't know if I said that. Say if N equals 1 mole. At STP, solve PV equals NRT for volume if N equals 1 mole. This would be like when I was on the Avogadro's law page and I had 1 mole of oxygen gas in a balloon. Okay? This would be for solving what the volume of that balloon would be at standard temperature and pressure. So, PV equals NRT. R, you had that before, 0.08206 liters atmospheres per mole Kelvin. So, I'll give you a second to rearrange that and plug it in. First of all, what is V equal to, rearranging the ideal gas law? V equals NRT over P. Yep. Divide both sides by P. Oops. Moles cancels, Kelvin cancel, atmosphere cancel. Punch in your calculator. punch it in your calculator anyway. Make sure that answer's right. Is it? Alan? I don't know if that answer's right or not. What do you think? Give me that answer to six significant figures.
There we go. 2-7. Oh, that's 7 significant figures. Close enough.
Anyway, you get the idea. 22.4 liters is an important value. That is the volume of 1 mole of any gas at 1 atmosphere. Okay? That's what we talked about with Avogadro's law. So if I have a mole of oxygen, a mole of nitrogen, a mole of any gas, hydrogen, even small gases like that, 22.4 liters is a volume about like this, a small beach ball worth. Okay? So that gives you another idea of what 1 mole is. 1 mole of gas takes about that much. A mole of water is 18 grams, so a little tablespoon or so, something like that. So gives you an idea of the density difference between a gas and a liquid, something like that. We can use this. Right, here we go. Helium, xenon, methane, all of them, 22.4 liters, 1 mole. A little better way of saying that is that the molar volume at STP, whenever we say something is molar, molar mass, molar volume, that means it's the mass or volume of what? Molar mass is the mass of what? Molar volume is the volume of what? 1 mole. Okay? When something is molar, that means of 1 mole. Right? So molar volume at STP, 22.4. It's actually called liters per mole. A little better unit to use. Okay. Any of you remember using this calculation a month ago or so? We've used a lot of calculations in here, but it was in lab. Yeah, the hydrogen gas. We gave you this conversion factor to say that normally a mole of gas has 22.4 liters. Right? You use that to calculate how many moles of hydrogen you had produced, you had measured in your little graduated cylinder. Okay? However, what assumption did we make in doing that in your experiment that's not entirely accurate? Temperature? What does temperature have to be at STP? Zero Celsius. Okay? And you'd be pretty uncomfortable holding that graduated cylinder underwater at 0 Celsius. Okay? Any other assumption? What's the other assumption at STP?
Temperature.
Temperature is that one. Temperature is zero. Pressure? What's pressure have to be at STP?
One atmosphere.
Did any of you go and check the barometric pressure that day? No. We assumed that it was 1 atmosphere. Also, since you had it inverted in there, if the liquid level inside of that graduated cylinder was not right at the liquid level outside of it, the pressure would be something other than 1 atmosphere as well. If you had it pulled up more, it'd be lower pressure. If you had it pushed down more, it'd be higher pressure. So I think part of the procedure or something was to tell you to align those liquid levels inside and outside too, if you can. All right, so I think we're out of time, right? Yep, okay. Have a nice weekend. See you Monday. Thank you.
It's your what? Where are you wearing? Some blood?
Something.